And we're holding on page Nun Gimel, the last line. We were learning yesterday about certain details of proper behavior during husband between husband and wife during tashmish and improper behavior and the different opinions on the subject. So now the Gemara continues. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel that describes how there's going to be a long golos and there's going to be a refinement. There's going to be the Jewish people are going to be sifted out again and again. Until finally, you're going to have those who are actually deserving of the Geulah Mitzvah Shleima. Does that mean that there are others who are not going to? That's a whole nother question. You can say that there are people who are going to be deserving it more on their own, and then people who are less deserving, but the Eibishter will bring them anyway because Lo Yidach Menu Nidach. We're not going to get into that right now. But anyway, the point is that the Navi implies that there's going to be a certain sifting out during all the period of Golos, where eventually you're going to have those who are worthy of coming to the Geulah and those who are not. So the pasuk uses the expression of "Boroisi mikem hamodim va'poshim bi." Hashem says, "I will boroisi from among you those who rebel and those who deliberately go against me." Boroisi, the simple meaning is Moloshin birur. Although the Rosh brings a possibility that it might also be Moloshin from a rare word in Tanakh that means to pierce. So either way, the point is, in other words, Hashem is saying there are these modim and poshim who they're not going to make it. So what are these modim poshim? Amar Rav Levi, elu bnei tesha midas. This refers to children of the following nine midas, and the siman bnei osnas meshuga ches. The siman for them are these letters: aleph samach nun saf mem shin gimel ayin ches. Stands for nine, or we're going to see possibly more than nine kinds of things nine kinds of mentalities that if the husband and wife have them when they're having relations, then it can have a bad effect on their children. So some of the Mefarshim explain, in other words, now the Ran says, for example, that it means because in each of these cases, as we're going to discuss, there's some facet of Aveira, there's some aspect of Aveira in their conception. Therefore, they wind up being modim and poshim. They wind up being these rebellious types who the Eibishter says are going to be refined and sifted out of the Jewish people during all the centuries of Golos. There is a different explanation, again, just like we talked about yesterday, as far as the various things that Rabbi Yochanan ben Dehavai said, the four improper things done during Tashmish, what effect they have, where we talked about that there will be Rishonim who learn it means it'll have an effect on the children, and others who learn that it'll have an effect on the parents. Here also you have there are Rishonim who learn that Bnei Teisha Midas means the people themselves who act according to these nine Midas. So we're not necessarily saying the children. The children may not end up being so great either, but we're talking about the Modim and Poshim would actually be the parents who do one of these following things. So again, the siman is the nine letters of osnas meshuga ches. So they are as follows. The first one is bnei ema, children of fear. So the Ran explains, in other words, that the husband puts fear on his wife and makes her feel like she has no choice but to have relations with him against her will. So therefore, so with that and all the other things, then the children are not gonna come out so good. That's not the right thing to do. A husband is supposed to be that his wife should be in the mood. As we learned yesterday, he has to make an effort to help her be in the mood and be happy for it or whatever, rather than to make her feel like she's forced into it.
Any of there against the woman? Against the woman, Altonu or something.
So that's the thing. Part of it is it's a lack of Avas Yisrael, and it's the Ran brings in this connection with Gemara and Eruvin, va'otz raglayim choite, a person who hastens with his raglayim, which is a euphemism for having relations, is a choite because he has no business rushing into it and making her feel like she should be forced into it. It has to be b'lev shalom from both of them. Bnei Anusa, then you have where she's Anusa, which is even worse, where he actually forces her into it. Emo would be basically he makes her feel like she hasn't got a choice, like he browbeats her or blackmails her into it, kind of, or gives her a guilt trip about it. Anusa would be where he literally forces her. The Ran explains that actually these two, I mean, they are fairly similar, and they both start with the letter Aleph, so therefore they're both under the Aleph over here. Otherwise, if you count it out, you're going to have 10. Then there's other explanations as well. The Rosh actually has a different girsa for the first one. Rather than bnei ema, he has a girsa bnei oma, meaning that we're talking about where the wife is a former shifcha who was freed. The Gemara mentions in various places that avodim and shfachas tend to be promiscuous, and therefore even, okay, she's freed, she has the halacha, she has the status of a regular Jewish woman. Nevertheless, she has that way of acting and that way of behaving that means that now when she's married, it's not likely to be that she has such great intentions while they're having relations. So and then Marsham brings that in Tur when it brings the when it mentions these nine, it doesn't mention B'nai Omar at all. It just mentions B'nai Anusa, and so then, therefore Taka brings it to nine. Anyway, so you have those. The next one is B'nai Snua, where the children of a hated one. So the husband hates his wife, and therefore the Ran says now he's going to be thinking about other women. And as we learned yesterday, that's really bad for the development of the children. Everybody asks about the question. Marsha brings up the question. Many other Mephoshim bring up the question. What about we find Vayar Hashem Kisnua Leah, that we find that Leah is described as hated, and she conceived Reuven and Shimon and then several of the Shvatim. So there's a lot of different answers. Marsha says that actually the Gemara in points out the Gemara in Bava Basra actually mentions that it doesn't mean Snua as in Yaakov disliked her. For one thing, that would be a very derogatory thing to say about her, and we know the Torah doesn't even say tries to even avoid derogatory language about a behemoth tmeya. So why would it say something like that about Leah? Rather, it means that snua, that she hated what Esav's maisim, as we know, there was the famous thing that people were saying that the two sons of Yitzchak and Rivka are going to marry the two daughters of Lavan, the older to the older, the younger to the younger. So as far as Leah knew, she's going to wind up marrying Esav, and that's why she was crying her eyes out. And therefore, so snua means that the Ebishter saw that she, Taka, hated the idea that she might have to be married to Esav, and that if therefore if she doesn't start having children right away, Yaakov may divorce her, and then she's going to wind up having to marry Esav. So therefore, the Ebishter right away started giving her children, so that she would be out of that danger. So therefore, according to that, she wasn't snua at all. There's a number of other different explanations, including that maybe Snua is relative. She wasn't, Yaakov didn't love her as much as Rachel, but nevertheless, he didn't outright hate her. Anyway, so there are several explanations along those lines. With that said, though, we'll get to B'nai Tmura, we'll get to. Okay, the next one is B'nai Nidri. The next one, the Nun from Osnas, stands for B'nai Nidri, when one or the other of them is in Nidri. Now, the Gemara discusses in Moed Katan whether when a person is in Nidri, they're allowed to have relations. The halacha is they are, actually. But nevertheless, Rabbi Levi is going over here according to the opinion that not. And the fact is, even if technically they are allowed to, it's still not the greatest thing for the children or for the couple themselves. Marsha brings up the Tur has a different girsa, B'nai Nida. However, Marashah says no, because we're not talking about over here things that are outright averus. All the nine things that we're listing over here are not outright averus in the sense that a person would be chayiv kodesh or some other kind of statutory punishment for. Even the anusa, we said, is a very wrong thing to do, but nevertheless, it's not it is an avera, but it's not that kind of avera that gets a particular punishment. So therefore, so B'nai Nida wouldn't really fit in the category over here. With that said, the Gemara and Midrashim do say in other places that yes, B'nai Nida do tend to be chutzpahdika children and have other bad midas. There is something interesting in that regard worth mentioning. Both the Rebbe and Rav Moshe Feinstein dealt with the question. You have many Bali Tshuva of the last 60 or so years who their parents didn't keep Taras and Mishpacha, so they were B'nai Nida, and many of them are fine, upstanding Erlich Yidin. So how does that work? So both the Rebbe and Rav Moshe, each in their own way. So the Alter Rebbe talks about that you can have. So what the Alter Rebbe talks about in Tanya is that even the couple has not had the right intentions when they're having relations. Still, they can bring down a tremendously great neshama. That's true. Nevertheless, there is still the point that you have the levushim of the neshama that depend on their machshavas at the time, and the levushim, if their machshavas are no good, the levushim aren't going to be good either. And yet you see you have Bali Tshuva, you don't have the Levushim seem to be great as well. So both the Rebbe and Rav Moshe dealt with this and answered that you actually find nowadays that's fairly common for women to go swimming in the ocean or even sometimes in swimming pools or whatever. Now, it's obviously not l'chatchila in any way a kosher to mikveh, and both of them stress, actually, let's not publicize this too much because you don't want people to get careless with the dinim of Tanis and Mishpacha. But nevertheless, there is reason to say, at least with the B'dievet on top of B'dievet, whatever, that they actually may have had a kosher to tvila before the conception.
Did that question come up in terms of Shidduchim?
In terms of Shidduchim, but also Bechlal, it's a question to understand, Pashat, when Chazal tell us that B'nai Nida are usually Chutz Ben Yaks and other things, and how does that work nowadays where we see so much to the contrary? But yeah, it can also be relevant.
Different ball game because
but the fact is they still have the you say Gershon is Gaia Kakotin Shinola Domi, we don't say that Bal Tshuva is Kakotin Shinola. So the question came up and both the Rebbe and Rav Moshe dealt with it in that way. Anyway, continuing on, the next one is B'nai Tmura. The next one is children of exchange. So the Ron explains, like we learned about yesterday, that a man has two wives and he's having relations with one of them and he thinks that he's with the other one. And we learned yesterday that that's no good. And here we're saying that it has a bad effect on the children who are conceived and a bad effect on the couple themselves. Here also, there's the question, which we touched on yesterday, that again, with Yaakov, you seem to have that problem, that here he thought he was with Rachel, and here he's with Leah. There is, in fact, an explanation from the Ramami Fano that says that is why Reuven, who was conceived from that misunderstanding, that's why he wound up in Eivor HaYarden rather than Eretz Yisrael proper. Nevertheless, the Magen Avraham says, look, the fact is, you know, Reuven is, after all, one of the 12 Shvatim, an essential part of the Jewish people. You can't just write him off as Ben Tmura. So the Magen Avraham explains, like we talked about yesterday, that would be where he has in mind one woman, and instead he's with the other one. Here we're talking about Yaakov intended to be with this woman. He just didn't know her name. He thought her name was Rachel, and it turns out her name was Leah. So that's not a problem. A different answer that's given is that was before Matan Torah. Which you also have in that connection. There's a well-known medrash involving Yishai, the father of David, where there was a Ben Tmura situation over there, because there's a story that Yishai didn't want to have relations with his wife, for one thing, because he's concerned about, since he's descended from Rus HaMoavia, maybe he's posel lover b'kohol, so therefore he has intentions to have relations with the Shifcha instead, and the Shifcha tells the secrets to Yishai's wife, and Yishai's wife comes in there instead, and from that David was conceived, and that's why his brothers look down on him, v'chola v'chola. So again, don't you have the problem of Bnei Tmura? And there you don't have the excuse that it was for Matan Torah either. So one answer is that an answer that also helps for Yaakov with Leah as well is they did everything they could. Here we're talking about Ben Tmura as the person himself. He intends one where he's with the other. Here Yaakov did whatever he could. He gave simonim to Rachel, and similarly Yishai gave simonim to his shifcha. That they went and blabbed the simonim to somebody else, he can't help that. So therefore, it's not a problem of Bnei Tmura.
Children that Yishai had
before. The children, that's the point thing. The way that it's explained, the Chidah, I think, explains in particular, is Yishai, yeah, he had many children by that point. He had six or seven children already, or six or seven boys plus a couple of girls, but then he started thinking, maybe after all, maybe we're not so sure about this din of Mayovi Vilay Mayovis, maybe after all, I'm Posel Lov HaBakohol, and therefore maybe I shouldn't be with my wife anymore, V'chol V'chol. Okay. The next one is Bnei Meriva. The next one is children of fighting. So here we're not talking about to the same degree before Snua, where she's actually outright hated, but still they've been having a quarrel. What? Say what? Okay. So Bnei Meriva. So they've been quarreling between themselves. So even then, it's not as serious as Snua, but nevertheless they have to make up before they're going to have relations. They shouldn't be doing it in a state of where they're upset with one another. Here also Marsha brings from the Torah a different girsa that instead of Meriva has the word Meredes, which you have a case that we touched on in Ksubas where a woman refuses to have anything to do with her husband and a particular Tashmish, and then still they're doing it. So Marsha says fine, but that might be included in Bnei Snur or Bnei Grusha Salev or whatever. Anyway, so Bnei Meriva. The next one is Bnei Shichrus. The next one is if either one of them are drunk, because then they're not focusing on each other properly, then they're just doing it as a behemish thing. The next one is Bnei Grusha Salev. The Gimel stands for where he has in his mind, he's decided in his mind to divorce her. So he hasn't told her yet, maybe, but once he has that idea in his head, then they shouldn't be having relations until he gets that out of his head. The next one, the Ayin, stands for Bnei Ubuvia, children of confusion. And here there are a lot of different explanations what that means. The Ran says that it means that many men have had relations with her. Now, in some cases, that might make her an outright, that might make the children outright mamzerim. You could say, you know, you're talking about, for example, she's a penuria, so there's no issue of mamzerus, but nevertheless, you don't know who the father is. The Mefarish over here, printed under Rashi's name, brings a couple of other possibilities. It can be the other way around, that a man has relations with a woman without knowing who she is. And a third possibility that the Mefoshim bring is that you can have, the Gemara mentions in particular in Masechta Yevamos, that after a couple has gotten divorced, or after a woman is widowed, and after she's Miss Gaia and so forth, they're supposed to wait she's supposed to wait a minimum of 3 months before getting remarried, so when she becomes pregnant, we'll know whether the child is from the first husband or from the second one. Because otherwise the child could be born after a 7 month pregnancy or after a 9 month one, and you wouldn't know. So another meaning of Bnei Urbuvia is where that wasn't done. She didn't wait the 3 months, and now she's pregnant, and you don't know which one of the two is the father.
But you saw from the man that the man was prepared for each.
Say what?
The parsha's a man, but the man was prepared.
Parsha's a man, yeah, that's true. That connects with this parsha. That's true. That's true. The Gemara mentions that in Yuma, that the mon could be used to determine paternity like that. That's true. I forgot about that. Yeah, you should go ask. But it connects with this week's parasha. But yeah, ordinarily, though, you can't rely on such things, and you need to have that shloshes chod she'avchon, it's called, yeah. Okay, then the last one is Bnei Chatsufa, children of a Chatsufa, namely where it's supposed to be. The Gemara mentions in various places that a woman is not supposed to ask for Tashmish verbally. As the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, she can make it very obvious to her husband that she wants it, but not to actually say in so many words. So to do that is called Chatsufa, and then that's another thing that has a bad effect on the children and on the couple themselves. Okay, so those are the 9 things that Reb Levi is saying, or depending on how we count them, we can count them as 10, where we're saying that the result is the modim and poshim that we learned before, the people who are rebellious and disobedient to Hashem, and they're the ones who over the centuries of Golos Hashem arranges that they slough off the Jewish people. So the Gemara asks, Eini, as far as that last one, Chatsufa, that she's not supposed to ask for Tashmish Peper. By the way, before we get to that, actually, there are a couple of others. Rashi mentions elsewhere, for example, that also they shouldn't have relations, the husband shouldn't have relations with his wife when she's sleeping. The Alter Rebbe points out in Shulchan Aruch, actually, if she's just drowsy is one thing, but if she's actually asleep, then never mind. First of all, it's part of Anusa that we're saying over here, but also there's always the concern that she might be Nida and he doesn't know. If she's drowsy, then she can at least tell him one way or the other. But otherwise, yeah. And you have a couple of other things also. Bechlal, I mentioned yesterday the sefer from the Ravid Balei Nefesh, which is brought by all the later poskim. You have other rishonim that talk on this topic and which are brought in Shulchan Aruch and the Noisa Kalim. That Bechlal, the idea is that it has to be the husband and the wife are on the same page and that they're getting along harmoniously before they should be having relations. And that the husband has a responsibility to make sure that his wife is satisfied. V'chola. Okay, so the Gemara says, as far as this last one, Chatsufa, Eini, so you're telling me it's wrong for a wife to ask for Tashmish Peper? V'amrab Shmuel v'nachmeni amrab Yonason. Kol Odom she'ishte tevaite, any husband who his wife asks him for Tashmish, and he follows through, having loy bonim, he's going to end up having children. Children of such caliber that you couldn't even find them in Moshe Rabbeinu's times. Shenema, because we find in Parshas Dvarim when Moshe is telling over to the Jewish people how he had appointed judges. He says, I said to them, Havu lachem anoshim chachamim unavoinim, bring forth from among yourselves men who are chachamim and nevoinim, so they have chachma and they have bina. Uchtiv v'ekachas yoshi shivteichem. Then the Pasuk says, Moshe says, I took the heads of your shivatim, and it says, anoshim chachamim v'yiduim, v'loi kosiv nevoinim. It doesn't say nevoinim over there, implying that he couldn't find nevoinim. Rashi mentions it on the Pasuk in Devarim. There's a whole sicha where the Rebbe talks about what that means. I mean, obviously, it's not like there were, among the Jewish people, there was nobody who had bina. So it means there's a certain degree of nevoinim that was lacking among the candidates for Bata Dinim over there. Ochtiv, but we see that in Moshe's times there weren't any Nevoinim. Ochtiv, but on the other hand, the Pasuk says, Yisachar chamor gorem, it says Yisachar is a strong bone donkey. Now, what does that mean? What does Yisachar have to do with a donkey? So back when Parshas Vayetze, where you have one evening, Yaakov is coming home from the field after the whole story with Leah and Rachel and the Dudoyim, where Rachel had asked Leah for the Dudoyim, and Rachel and Leah says, not enough, you took away my husband, you're taking away my Dudoyim as well. And Leah and Rachel says, fine, then you can have Yaakov for tonight. And then the pasuk continues, Vayova Yaakov in Asoda Ba'erev, that evening Yaakov comes home, and Rachel tells him, and Leah tells him, you're going to come to me, Eli Tovay, you're going to come to my tent because I've arranged it with Rachel. And Yisachar was conceived that night. So when the pasuk says Yisachar chamor gorem, And actually, there's a remez in it that it means that the donkey caused it. Chamur, the donkey gorem, meloshen groma, that the donkey caused Yisachar to be conceived. There are two different explanations in Midrashim. One is that the donkey automatically started turning like by instinct towards Leah's tent, and therefore she saw him and she came out. And the other one is that the donkey brayed, and Leah heard the sound and came out to welcome Yaakov and tell him which way to come. In any case, the point is that it sounds like she actually asked Yaakov for Tashmish. She says, Eli Tovoi, and the Pasuk says, Mibnei Yisachar Yodeh Bin Yil'itim, from the descendants of Yisachar in Dovid HaMelech's times, there were people who knew Bina for the times. They were experts in Kiddush HaChodesh, they were members of the Sanhedrin, so we see that they were Yodeh Bina, they were Nevoinim. So here we're saying, in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, you couldn't find, outside of Shevet Yisachar, you couldn't find Nevoinim, but we see that Shevet Yisachar had such people. And on the face of it, we're saying that all of that was brought about by Leah taking the initiative and inviting Yaakov into her tent. So we see that it is a good thing for her to ask for it verbally. And the answer is, Hahi demartzia out suri. The answer is, what Rochel did, what Leah did, and what a wife should do is to convince her husband but without saying so many words. She doesn't tell him, come, let's have relations. She says, come to my tent. In fact, the Prishan Tur explains just that. She uses the expression Eli Tovoi. Now, to be sure, the word tovoi can mean bia, as in having relations, but it can also mean just come into my tent, and that kind of thing is acceptable. Not only acceptable, but we're saying it's a good thing. But for her to say in so many words, let's do tashmish, that's inappropriate, we're saying. Marsha explains the connection actually is, what's the connection? That if Marzi Artsuri, that if she shows her desire and the husband reciprocates, then it results in such great children, is because Isha Mazras Tchila Yeledes Zachar, and because she put herself forward like that, therefore she has children who are Chachamim Unevoinim. So we see it as a good thing. And in fact, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, in these halachas, in Orach Chaim, that if the husband sees that the wife is making an effort to show that she wants it, whether with special clothing or jewelry or whatever it is, then he should take the hint and then satisfy her. Okay. Abon Adorim Perek Shlishi. So the parak begins by talking about there are certain cases where a person makes a neder and it's not considered a real neder for one reason or another. It can be an exaggeration. It can be it was a situation of oiness and he had to make a neder, etc. In any case, then the Gemara starts talking. The Gemara ends up talking about the matter of hatoras nedarim. Now you have like this: when it comes to being matur neder, there's two major ways there's two major approaches to being matur neder. They're called pesach and charota. Pesach is where you find is charota first. Chazor charota is easier to explain. It means just regret. The person regrets that he made the neder, not for any particular reason, just say, I shouldn't have made that neder in the first place. Then you have a Pesach, which is where the Chacham explains to him and says, did you realize that there's a certain side effect of your neder, the certain consequence of your neder, which you didn't realize? This is why, by the way, this kind of thing, it says in Pirkei Avos, you have al tishaloi b'shas nidra. Don't ask a person when he's making a neder. And Mephoshim on the Mishnah explained, because that's just it. Suppose, for example, a person is going to be making a neder. Now, if you don't confront him about it at the time, later on he may realize himself, you know what, this is causing effects and consequences that I didn't foresee. And then he goes to a chacham, and the chacham points that out to him and says, in that case, then we have a valid reason, we have a valid pesach for your neder. On the other hand, if you talk to him at the time and say, do you realize you're going to be making that neder? Do you realize it has this consequence? You might say, well, I don't care, I'm making the neder anyway. And then you ruin the pesach for him. So therefore, that's what the Mishnah means over there. In any case, so the Gemara discusses over here about the whole matter of using a Pesach. Bechlal, there's a machlokas rishonim, whether you can even use charota at all. In the end, actually, it says in Shulchan Aruch, what you try to do is you do both Pesach and charota, but you actually use the charota itself to create a Pesach. You say, if you would realize that you're going to regret making this neder, would you have made it? And then that itself becomes a Pesach, a valid reason to be matur neder. So the Gemara discusses that the Gemara brings a few examples that it's going to bring over here about the way Chachamim created a Pesach for a neder and then were able to be matur. So one of them is Bar Brate de Rab Yanai Sova, Asoy Lechameh de Rab, also Lechameh de Rab Yanai Sova. Rab Yanai Sova's grandson came to him to be Matur Neder. Omale, so the grandfather says to the grandson, Ilu Havas Yadas de Paschen Pinkasach, if you had known that when you're making the neder, that they're going to be opening up your notebook in Shemayim, they're going to be looking over your Maisim, or Mamash Mashin Ba'ovdach, and checking in to everything you've been doing so far, because in other words, like you're making a neder as if like, look what a tzaddik I am, that I'm asking myself beyond what the Torah says, so then they're going to start investigating in Shemayim, well, you know what, are you really on that level? Would you have made the neder in that case? So the grandson says no, Vishauye, and so Rab Yanai Sova was matur neder for him. Amar Abba, Maikra, where's a posik that we see that point, that because a person makes a neder, then the Eibush just starts looking through what he's done, what his deeds. The posik says, V'acha nedorim levaker, after nedorim comes an examination. So in the simple meaning of the pasuk, it means something when a person is in trouble, then he makes a neder, and then that helps him out of the trouble. But here the Gemara is darshaning that it means that after a person makes a neder, there's a levaker, then the based in Shamayla starts investigating what he's done so far and see if he's on that level.
So if you say something bli neder?
So if you say something bli neder, then by definition it's not a neder, but no, you still have...
What's a neder? If you said something, you forgot to say bli neder.
So the classic example of a neder, the real example of a neder that it talks about earlier in our Masechta, is where a person says, for example, this object is to me like a korban. So that would be, it's called makbis benedarim, and that kind of thing is a classic neder. But we learned a few days ago that there can also be, for example, a person says that I'm going to get up, and I'm going to get up early, and I'm going to learn this section of Torah, then that's also considered a neder. A neder of tzedakah is also a neder. So there are a few kinds of nedarim. So there are certain cases, again, there are certain cases where a neder is very appropriate. We talked about yesterday or the day before. Yaakov Avinu made a neder when he's running away from Esav. The Jewish people made a neder when they're faced with a battle against Melech Arad, a Molech in disguise, and they make a neder of Achramti Asarehim. So in cases like that, it's appropriate. And then we had the story with the Bacher, with Shimon Ben Shattach, with Shimon HaTzadik, a few days ago, where he realized his Yetzirah was about to get the better of him, so he made a neder of Nazirus. So there are certain cases where a neder is appropriate, but we're saying by and large, other things being equal, it's not. Especially
if someone do something.
What? A neder can be to yourself or to somebody else. It can be for, we talked about the other day, for example, you might tell somebody, let's the two of us get up early and learn this piece of Torah together. So that constitutes not only a form of neder, but also we learned in the Gemara, you have to be the first one there because you're the one who initiated the idea. But yeah, in the middle of the Masechta, it talks about in detail, you can have a case, Hamudr Hanah Mechaveroi, where a person makes a neder that you're also to have Hanah from me, or that I'm also to have Hanah from you. So yeah, Nedarim can be interpersonal as well. One point is, though, a lot of times a person makes a neder out of anger or out of frustration or something like that, and they were saying that we're saying is for sure not a good thing. Okay. Then the Gemara brings another example of a loshen for hataras nedarim that one of the chachamim used based on another pasuk in Mishlei. Yesh boite, there can be a person who speaks boite meloshen bitris fasayim kimadkeroy schorev, which is like a piercing of a sword, or the shon chachamim marpe, but the tongue of the chachamim is a healing. So what does that mean? Kol boite, a person who expresses a neder roy ledoikre becherev, he deserves to be pierced with a sword. However, the tongue of the Chachamim, who can be matir his neder, is a healing that helps heal and that helps cure the situation because they're matir neder for him. In other words, because they find him a Pesach, they find him a Pesach, and they find him a Charata. So like this, Marshal says, the point is, in other words, that like this, what Roy Ledoikre Becherev, so he did... So he spoke without thinking. He made his neder without thinking through the consequences of it, which means, in other words, in effect, like he acted as though he doesn't have a heart. So now the Lashon Chachamim, where the Chachamim speak, they are careful with their words. They do measure their words before they speak them. Then therefore, that's marpe, then that helps heal him, and that restores to him the lack of intelligence that he had when he made that neder. And the Gemara brings another one, another Pesach that one of the Chachamim used, Tanya, Reb Nosson Omer, Hanoder, when a person makes a neder, ki'ilu bona boma. It's as if he built a bummer during the time when bummers are also, which is during most of Jewish history. There were only small windows in Jewish history during the time when the Mishkan was in Gilgal, the 14 years after they came into Eretz Yisrael while they're conquering and dividing it, and the 57 years that the Mishkan was in Neuven Given, where you were allowed to build private bummers wherever you want. After that, before and after that, it was also, we find throughout Sefer Melachim that people were doing it anyway, but in any case, a person makes a neder as if he built a bummer, v'amakaymer, and then if he fulfills the neder, kilo hikrav alei korban, is as if he compounds the aveda, as if he brings a korban on that bummer. Now, why is that? So there's a number of reasons. The Ran says the reason is like this. What is it? What? No, so it's a negative thing. So to bring a korban on a bummer, to make a bummer itself is already an isser. But it's not.
If you don't fulfill your promise, it's much
more. In other words, the better thing to do would be matir neder. The better thing to do would be matir neder rather than going through and fulfilling the promise. So the Ran explained.
So wait.
So again, when a person makes a neder, for example, b'shas tzara, that's different. But we're talking about a time when a person is making a neder at a time when a place where it's inappropriate to do that. So the Ran explains like this. A person makes a neder, then it means he's assuring something on himself. He thinks that he's doing a mitzvah. Here you have the Eibishter gave a bunch of isurim, and he's going beyond that and adding his own isurim. So therefore, it's like building a bummer. A bummer also, a person is apt to think that he's doing a mitzvah. Look at that. Why should the Eibishter be served only in one place in the world, in the Beis Hamikdash? Let's expand the places where we can serve Hashem. Let's build a bummer someplace else. He doesn't realize that it's an aveda. Now, when he goes and fulfills the neder, rather than going and being matir it, it's as if he's compounding it. He's doing even worse. He's now actually going and bringing a korban on the bummer, which the actual korban would make him chayiv kares for that. So in other words, what he's doing is, the Ran brings from a Yerushalmi, that the Eibishter says, lo dayecha she'osra l'cha Torah, isn't enough what the Torah asked for you, what you have to invent your own new isurim. So that would be a reason why what he's doing is wrong and is considered like building a bummer and bringing a korban on it. So when the Chachamim make a Mishmeres, that's different. That's their job. Their job is to make a Siyog LaTorah. But a person himself doesn't necessarily have a business making his own Siyogim like that. Now again, there are exceptions, like we said before. For example, that boy in the story of Shimon HaTzadik, it was a very good thing that he made his Nedu of Nazirus, and Shimon HaTzadik praised him very highly for that. But so we're saying, once in a while, it is necessary. The Rambam also mentions, for example, in Hilchos Deis, you might have a person who realizes, you know, he's really addicted to something or whatever, and he needs a Nedu to break out of it. So there are times when it's a positive thing, but we're saying many times we're saying that it's not. Marsha explained that we also learned about this concept in Yuvamis, and Marsha gave a different reason over there, that the idea is that building a bummer itself, after all, in and of itself is not osir. Bringing the korban on it is the isser, but building the bummer is a step towards the isser. The same way, a person making a neder is a step towards the isser, because it might be that he's going to either end up keeping it where he shouldn't have, he should have been matur neder, or worse, that he's going to break it. So therefore, making the neder is like building a bummer, and then actually fulfilling it is like bringing the korban on it. So the korban is the actual isser, but the building the bummer is the first step in it. And the Kli Yoker also makes a point on it at the beginning of Parashas Matos, where the Torah tells us about the concept of Nedarim, Kachol HaYotzim B'Piv Yaseh. The Kli Yoker makes another point over there, that a person makes a neder many times. It may be out of a sense of gaiva. Look what a great guy I am, that I'm going to make a neder. And then when he fulfills it, then that's likely to puff up his gaiva even more. Look at me, I actually fulfilled this new Isser that I created. And therefore we're saying that's no good. It's like building a bummer, which is also a high place. That's literally, bummer means a high place. You're taking dirt or stones or whatever, and building them up into a high place, and therefore, so he's also doing like that and making himself into bigger than he is. So it's better to say things bleed neder, right? And if a person is going to make a neder, again, there are certain limited cases where a person can make a neder, but it's not. Yeah, it's better to say bleed neder. Now, what the Gemara actually ends up saying, by the way, about all these things we just said, about what Rabbi Yanai Sova said, and about this thing about a person who makes it, about what Rabbi Yanai Sova said, that if you knew that they're going to open up and examine your Maisim and Shemayim, would you have made the neder? And the thing that Rabbi Gamliel said, that if a person, the Gemara didn't quote it, he was here in the name of Rabbi Gamliel, but elsewhere the Gemara mentions that Rabbi Gamliel had said it, that a person makes a neder, deserves to be pierced with a sword, and then the Chachamim heal it, by meaning matter neder. And the thing about Rabbi Nosson, that making a neder is like building a bummer, the Gemara ends up saying, actually, you can't use any of those as a Pesach. Because all of those, a regular Erlich HaYid, if you confront him with these kinds of things, he would naturally say, of course not. But does he really mean, of course not? Does he really regret the neder because of that? Not necessarily. So in other words, a regular yid is not going to have the chutzpah to say, if you tell him, did you know that now they're investigating your maisim in Shemayim, would the average yid say, well, I don't care, let them investigate? No, he would say, well, okay, then I didn't realize that. But does that genuinely cause him to regret the neder? Not necessarily. So you can't use that or the other things that the Gemara has just mentioned. You can't use those as a valid Pesach for a neder. The Dayanim would have to find other grounds to be matter the neder. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Omar Shmuel, kol ha-neder, a person makes a neder, afa pisha makaimo, even though he fulfills the neder, again, rather than being matir neder, nikra rosha. So he's called a rosha for doing that because, again, he has no business making a neder in the first place. Omer Abba or Abahu Maikra, where's a pasuk where we see that point? The pasuk says, "V'chisechta linder," when you, if you will hold back from making the nedarim, lo yiyeh b'chochet, then there will not be sin in you. So in this, in other words, in the simple meaning, the most straightforward meaning of the pasuk is don't think you have to make nedarim. On the contrary, if you don't make a neder, then you're better off because there won't be chet. But we also understand that it means that there is the flip side is also true. If you do make nedarim, then you're making yourself prone to chet because you may end up violating the neder. Or again, even keeping the neder is not such a great thing either. Furthermore, v'yalef chodla chodla. On top of that, also we can learn by Exeda Shava from this word sechdal, which means that you withhold or you stop from another place where it uses the same shorish. Ksiv hocha techdal, uchtiv asim, shom rishoyim chodlu roiges. There, this is Eov is talking about in the grave after 120, the rishoyim have ceased their roiges, where roiges means trembling and also anger. Here the Gemara is taking it in the sense of anger. So it means, in other words, that here, so we see that Chodlu is mentioned in connection with the Rishoyim. So after they're dead, then Chodlu, then their anger and their other Midas Tovis, their other Midas Rois, cease. But in other words, as long as they're alive, they have them. But we see, in other words, that the word Sechdal is associated with that idea of a person being a Rosha and having bad Midas. So we see, therefore, the Torah is telling us, if Sechdal Linder, if you hold back from making the neder, then good, then you're good. Lo yiyeh b'chochet, you won't have averus, because you won't be guilty of making the neder and of fulfilling it in the first place, and you won't be like a rosha. Marshall says there's also a connection in the fact, again, we talked about that when a person makes a neder, many times he might make the neder out of anger. Like we said before, for example, a person might make a neder, I won't have hanah from you, or you won't have hanah from me. Why would a person make such a neder? Because he's upset with the other guy. So therefore, that's where Ruigas comes in, and we're saying that if a person does not make such an nedarim, then he's much better off, whereas if he does, then that's the mark of a Rosha, is to act like that out of anger and to make nedarim like that, which is why the next piece of Gemara is going to talk about, the next couple of pieces of Gemara are going to talk about the destructiveness of anger. But we'll learn that tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Person walks out of certain direction, three times, he doesn't say, neder. He wants to change them in the future.
No, because they're doing something three times before it's doing something which is a mitzvah, or at least a quasi-mitzvah or whatever, just walking in a certain direction is not. No. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola, Zayin Shvat. The Rambam tells us that, as we well know, Mashiach is going to be from Beis David and from the descendants of Shlomo. So why is that important that he has to be from David and from Shlomo? David represents the essence of what Jewish kingship is about. The Rambam himself writes, the halacha, that once David was anointed, then he was zoicher in the crown of kingship and in the dynasty for himself and his descendants ad olam. Unlike, the Rambam goes on to say, a king from any other shevet is appointed, then he might, it'll be a thing, maybe even for a couple of generations, but eventually it's going to go away from his family. So that's the importance of David, of Mashiach being from Beis David. As far as what's the importance, the Pnimius Yanyanim of him being from Mizera Shloima, from Shloima's descendants. So in Shloima's times, we had a Me'ein, we had a foretaste of how it's going to be, by the Gula Mitzvah Shloima. It was a completely peaceful time, which is why he's called Shloima. The Pasuk says he's going to be called Shloima because Shalom Yiyeh B'Yomav, there's going to be peace in his times. And the reason is, what brought that about? Shloima also had the peak of Chochmah, Vayechem Mikol Adam, as the Pasuk says, he was wiser than any other person in his time. And because of that, everybody of the Chochmas of all the Goyim were bottled to him. So they didn't even need war in order to subjugate the Goyim. Automatically, all the Goyish nations realized that how much lower and lesser they are compared to Shloima. So this is the kind of thing that's going to be lost lava as well with Mashiach, where everybody's going to realize that he's on a far higher level than them, and therefore that's also part of what it means, what the true meaning of what it means to be a melech, and that's the point why Mashiach has to be descended from Shloimeh as well. Okay, continuing on halachas of Shabbos, continuing on halachas of cures and therapeutic things on Shabbos. So you have various dinim about putting on bandages and dressings and things like that. So the basic idea being, again, as we've been saying throughout the siman, you can't put anything that's curative on it. So for example, various kinds of ointments or things like that. But on the other hand, for example, to keep it from getting scratched up, that you could do. So for example, Band-Aids in and of themselves would be fine, except that you do have the issue that to tear off the to tear open the wrapping of the bandage, and also to take off the sticky things that the sticky things on it are not so simple on Shabbos. So really, actually, what you're supposed to do in that case is open it up. If you figure you're going to need some on Shabbos, then you open it up, you take off the tabs, and then put them back on before Shabbos. And then on Shabbos itself, there's no problem putting it on and then sticking it on, because then you're just doing it in order to keep the wound from getting scratched up. You're not doing it in order to heal anything.
But is it makabe patish when you take off those?
Well, that's the problem. If you take them off on Shabbos, it may well be makabe patish, which is why if you take them off before Shabbos and then put them back on, then you've avoided that issue. So then you also have those issues involved with dyeing things from the blood. So now with a bandage, for example, you have no intention of dyeing it with the blood. It's not your need. So therefore there's less of an issue with it. But sometimes depending on what you're putting on it, there might be issues with that as well. And then you also have another related din is you have a boil or a pimple or a zit or something like that. So now you want to squeeze it, you want to open it, or you want to squeeze it or cut it open or whatever to get out the pus. Now there's two major reasons why you might open up such a thing. You might be doing it in order that it should heal, or you might be doing it just to get out the pus so it's not so uncomfortable. To do it in order to remove the pus, that's fine. Because of tsar, the chum allowed that kind of thing because of tsar, but to open it up where you're doing it in order that then it'll drain nicely and it'll heal, that again would be a problem. And in addition, Kitzur Shonarach points out, if you do it with your fingernails as well, then you're also pulling off some of the skin, and that's a different problem as well. So when you're doing it in order to relieve the pressure to take out the pus, then that kind of thing is mutter. Okay, and then another din in this connection is you're allowed to remove scabs that are on a wound. So it's scabbed over. So you're allowed to peel that off on Shabbos. You'd have to make sure that it doesn't bleed though, because bleeding is a different thing. Oisa chabura, that's a different issue with malacha. Okay.